So, let's see. So I guess let's see. I mean, last time we've already been over this once, but I'm trying to think of the. Well, how'd you get involved with the project? Yeah, that's a good place to start. How did you get involved with the project or with the class? Start with the class. So one of the reasons why I decided to do the co-term was because I heard about the ME206 class.
Okay.
I read about it, saw the website, and thought that it would be really important to actually use my mechanical engineering to do something that was actually useful.
Right.
I mean, not that it's not useful elsewhere, but to have an impact elsewhere in the world.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, when I graduated, I was trying to figure out what are some reasons for me to actually do my clinical except or delay my transition from Stanford to life.
Right.
And I found some good reasons, and ME206 was one of those reasons.
Okay. And how did you hear about it?
I heard about it by sifting through the course bulletin.
Okay.
And I was just looking at, these are some classes to take. What classes can I take?
Yeah.
And I read the course description, and I just fell for it.
Okay.
And the more I found out about it, the more I decided, this is really what I want to do. This is a must-take class.
Right. Okay. So it was about, like, I mean, you had an inkling that you wanted to stay around Stanford, but then seeing this was a way to put your skills into practice.
Yeah.
For something.
Something that was going to make an impact.
Okay. And so then once you applied to the class and then were enrolled in the class, and then how did you come upon this project? Was the whole class around this?
The way it worked was, with ME206 there were a couple sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were sponsors from Mexico.
Okay.
There are sponsors from Nepal.
Uh-huh.
And then there are sponsors from Myanmar.
Okay.
And ID was a sponsor from Myanmar.
Okay.
And of all the stories, I mean, there are stories of hospitals in Nepal needing incubators.
Okay.
And then there were hospitals in Mexico that were in dire need of some kind of care or ways to improve care.
Yeah.
So that was more vague and more general.
Okay.
And when I heard about IDE and Myanmar and work that was already being done in Myanmar.
I
fell for it.
Okay.
One of the things also was that there was previous work that they had done in terms of working on a pressure pump,
mm-hmm.
working on suction pumps, and I think one of the reasons why I gravitated toward that was because it seemed like they were more focused and they knew generally this is kind of an area that we knew we could have an impact.
Okay.
And I saw that, I can contribute.
Yeah.
Because it was more engineering focused.
Right.
And that was one way where I thought my strengths could help.
Okay. And so the class, like some people working on the incubation stuff in Mexico, like, and that was just, that was the same class, but a different group was working.
Same class, yeah.
Okay.
What happened was they split the class depending on your preference.
Okay.
I wasn't sure why not everyone jumped at IDE.
Yeah.
They just seemed like an amazing sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
But that was why I jumped at it.
Right.
And I'm glad I felt that way.
Yeah.
So, but in the end, the class got divided into three separate groups: mm-hmm. a Nepal group, a Myanmar group, and a Mexico group.
Okay.
And I was. I decided that I wanted to be working with IDE.
Right, okay.
And then within that, you expressed interest in which projects you wanted. They had a list of projects.
Okay.
I know within the Myanmar group, there was a list of projects. There was water storage.
Okay.
There was drip irrigation.
Mm-hmm.
There was base of the pyramid design.
Mm-hmm.
There was microfinance. The deep lift was a part of it.
Okay.
And then there was also the $5 suction pump.
Okay.
Right now, I think the suction pump sells for $15 to $20.
Okay.
And they wanted to have an introductory version.
Right.
A $5 version where you use it for one season. You
right.
see that it's actually going to help you grow your crop.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can eventually then say, okay, then it's worth my
time and energy, and it's worth my investment to go ahead and put $15-$20 into one that actually will last
right.
a good couple of years.
Yeah, okay.
And so, I mean, it's also like a stepping stone. If you're a family that's poor and you don't have very much money,
right.
but you want to get into it, you can invest in this $5 pump. Use that as a stepping stone to eventually upgrade one day to a $15-$20 pump.
Right, okay.
So that was one of the other projects that I was very interested in.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And then when I saw the deep lift one,
mm-hmm.
One of the reasons they needed deep lift is because they were serving this specific area in Myanmar,
uh-huh.
or specific areas in Myanmar where the water level was relatively shallow.
Right.
And they pointed out on a map, these are the areas where we can't help. We can't help at all. We can't even try and sell this because it won't even work. We can't sell these suction pumps.
Because the water table was...
Was below the theoretical limit, which is 33 feet.
Okay.
So the theoretical limit for a suction pump is 33 feet.
Okay.
I think I explained this too.
Yeah, but if you could go over it again. I'd like to hear.
Sure. Yeah. So if you think of how it works in terms of drinking Coke out of a bottle, you're drinking through a straw. The way you're drinking the Coke is you're sucking water by creating lower pressure at your lips.
Okay.
As compared to the pressure, which is atmospheric pressure.
Right, okay.
Which is at where the Coke is. And so you're creating this pressure difference, which wants the water to go from atmospheric pressure to lower pressure.
Right, okay.
And the lowest amount or the best vacuum that you can create is a perfect vacuum.
Right.
And anything past that, then it's impossible.
Yeah.
So if you imagine the weight of water and the force of the weight of water, and you're trying to counteract that weight or that force by creating a pressure difference,
right.
There's a limit where the perfect vacuum that you create, the pressure difference between atmospheric pressure and a perfect vacuum, can't overcome the weight of the water, and that occurs around 33 feet.
Okay. Okay. And so I think then there's something about, like, during the dry season, the water table is below 33 feet?
Yeah, usually what happens is during monsoon season, the water table, even in the drier regions, they can get within the possibility of using suction pumps.
Okay.
Because, it's pouring all the time.
Right.
So farmers can use suction pumps because the water table is maybe 20 feet or so.
Right.
But during the dry season, it sinks way below 33 feet. And 33 feet is also a theoretical limit, so you're not taking into consideration different losses. So the limit that they can probably pump realistically is maybe 25.
Okay. Okay.
So once the water level falls below that, they're sitting on top of water, but they just can't get to it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And so there are farmers throughout many of the drier regions of Myanmar, and they just can't access this water.
Yeah, yeah.
Not even for drinking. The ways they get water for drinking is they'll find an open water source, they'll carry buckets, or they'll drill, or they'll dig pits that are, 15 feet deep, and then from there install a water pump.
Right, okay.
And then use that to, they're just scrounging for water. They're trying to get water for household use. And that's just for household use.
Right, right.
Many of the farmers are trying to use water pumps for irrigation or water control. And during the dry season, they just can't do that, so they can't sustain any of their crops during the dry season. So what they're forced to do is they're forced to abandon their families during the dry season, go work elsewhere, and send money home. And so families get separated during the dry season because of this. That's just one of the reasons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, and trying to sustain the family.
An economic issue. There must be some solution extant for getting water deeper than 33 feet. But this is probably an expensive proposition.
There are expensive methods of doing it. There are expensive deep lift pumps. One of the things about ID that I respect the most is that they're not trying to donate water pumps.
Right.
There are definitely places throughout the world where there's no other way to do it.
Yeah.
Where, you need some kind of like technology that's available only in the U.S. to be able to drill through layers of rock and all this other stuff. So, I mean, in those cases, 100-foot, 200-foot wells with these industrial or these very precise water pumps that cost, you know, a couple thousand dollars, I mean, there are places where those are necessary. Myanmar is not really one of those places. There are some areas like that, but for the most part, Myanmar is special in the sense that most of the soil below ground is soft. You can drill through it pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
You can dig these 2-inch tube wells pretty easily. And you can access, there's water that's just sitting there.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're sitting on a gold mine. So the way IDE does it is, instead of trying to donate these water pumps to people, they're selling them to them.
Right, right.
I mean, you probably feel this, I feel it all the time, where if someone gave me something, if, you know, a friend gave me a textbook or, you know, any other present, I wouldn't treat it as well as if I had purchased it.
Right.
If I spent $100 on the textbook, I'm going to take care of it.
Yeah.
If a friend gave me that same $100 textbook, I treat it a little bit differently. And that's how many people deal with water pumps. If someone gave you a water pump, and you're a small plot farmer, if it breaks, you're not taking your care of it as much because usually, most of the time, the pumps are donated to communities. And communities will, you know, neglect the water pump, and it's just like, well, it's not mine, I'm not taking care of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, one, they purchase it, so they have a sense of ownership.
Yeah.
And it's theirs.
Right.
So it's theirs to take care of. They have responsibility, they have ownership. And so they're selling these pumps to them at cost in terms of production. All the development work and all the research and design, all that is done through donations and funds that NGOs usually get.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in terms of having an impact on people, I think it's the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Instead of just giving it to them.
Right.
I mean, it's just like you give a man a fish, you know, you feed him for a day, you teach a man a fish, you feed him for life.
Right, right.
It's the same thing. It's
just
the same thing, just applied differently.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah.
Can you talk to us about what was innovative about what you did? Because you solved a huge problem. This is a big problem. You've got kind of specific parameters, economic parameters. There's physics involved.
What made it?
What did you do? I mean, how could you make an inexpensive pump that actually... Those kinds of pumps have been the way they are since
forever.
The 17th century.
Yeah. Pump technology hasn't really changed, has not changed. Anything that we came up with was used at one point or another in some pump at one point or another in time. IDEO had worked on a deep lift water pump, and other companies, I think AfriDev, and many other companies have worked on deep lift pumps. One of the things that we did was we catered the design, or we designed our pumps specifically to fit what the people in, or what the farmers in Myanmar needed. They needed a pump that pumped specifically. I mean, I think most of the farmers had water tables that were approximately 40 feet. So we weren't trying to design the universal deep lift pump. We were trying to design the deep lift pump that worked for them, specifically.
Yeah.
And we said, this is our target market. These are the guys that we're trying out. There are lots of other people that might need water pumps that can pump deeper than 60 feet or deeper than 40 feet. But if we hit around 40, if we can go for 40 to 60 or something around that, and we try and make it as cheap as possible, and we design around those parameters, that's what we're looking for. And so looking at power calculations on what humans can, I mean, how much power can be generated by people, we can get an idea of this is about the limit that we can get.
Right.
And then looking at also, this is what's ergonomic for people. I mean, there are deep lift pumps, and those usually, they are all hand-powered. It's just like, no, most of your muscles are in your legs.
Right.
And I mean, IDE has already figured that out in terms of their suction pumps and their tradle pumps and their pressure pumps. They all take advantage of the tradle action.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what One, that's what people are used to, and that's what people associate IE with.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, two, it just physiologically, it's more efficient to be able to use your legs.
Right.
I mean, there was debate about whether or not it would be more efficient to go for a more bicycle motion, something that's rotational, as compared to something that was cradle.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea was still to use the legs. And then looking at this is the average size of your typical Myanmar farmer. This is how much he's probably going to weigh. He's not gonna be as big as, you know, someone in Africa or someone else in London, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at that and looking at how this is probably his approximate step size, these are the approximate lengths of the treadles, and these are the approximate lengths of the rocker arm, and this is the stroke length that we want in order to get the desired flow rate.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all things that we looked at. We also looked at, we're going to make this pump manufactured locally by a lot of the manufacturers in Yangon. So we're designing, okay, these are the locally available materials. This is an expensive valve. How are we going to make it cheaper? And then we're just looking at specific cases. And so we're just looking at, I think, focusing specifically on our user was really how we did it.
What was the price point that you wanted to come in on?
The price point was $40 or $50.
That's to sell or to manufacture?
To sell.
Okay, so basically it brings it down for manufacturer too.
I would say $25, roughly.
And it had to be durable.
Yeah.
It had to be repairable.
Yeah, one of the issues was if it failed, farmers have put together water pumps that would kind of work. And, I mean, they would dig 15, 20-foot pits, have your suction pump about 15, 20 feet deep, but you're sitting on top. You're up here pumping away up here, and the actual washer was down here. The actual pump was down here, and that's pumping from there 20 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
So you're pumping 20 feet deep here, which is the limit for a suction pump.
Right.
And then you're lifting the other portion.
Right.
And so if your pump is down here 20 feet below ground in a large pit, and your washer needs to be replaced, you need to crawl into that pit, replace that, fix that. So that was a huge issue. We saw that a lot of people were working and dealing with those issues and dealing with how am I going to replace this washer on my pump. And so that was one of the things that we made sure that we addressed in the design of the deep lift. So, you know, if they're going to need to replace the washer, then they need to be able to pull it out.
Mm-hmm.
If it breaks, will it get stuck in there?
Mm-hmm.
And so those are all things that we looked at.
So in terms of how, like, so that's like a pretty concrete issue. It's like, okay, how did we replace the washer? How did you go about working through some of those potential challenges for your deep lift pump?
For our deep lift. And one of the things, also, I mean, this slight tangent.
Yeah.
If you compare designs between, I mean, first of all, technology, in terms of pump technology, the deep lift pump that we made and the deep lift pump that's been made for the last couple decades. Same concept.
Mm-hmm.
Same concept in terms of pumping.
Which is what other...
The way it works is you have two valves.
Mm-hmm.
One is at the bottom, under the water level.
Okay.
And then, so that's a one-way valve, which allows water to only go one way.
Right.
So you have that down here,
mm-hmm.
Under the water table. And then you have a piston or a plunger,
mm-hmm.
and that has another one-way valve in it.
Okay.
So if you imagine a tube well,
mm-hmm.
with a foot valve in the bottom, and you have this piston, on the upstroke,
mm-hmm.
this valve in the piston stays closed.
Okay.
And so what's happening is that on its upstroke, it pulls water almost like a suction pump.
Right.
It pulls water through this one-way valve.
Uh-huh.
So this goes up and water opens this valve,
mm-hmm.
and water gets through.
Yeah.
And then on the downstroke,
right.
Then this foot valve closes, and this one opens.
Right.
The valve and the piston opens. And so water comes through that.
Yeah.
And so each time, each successive stroke, what you're doing is you're pulling water up, but you're not letting it down.
Right. Okay.
You're pulling it up, and you're not letting it down. And so on the downstroke, the water goes through the piston and up here. And then so the water level's here, and you do it one more time, and the water level goes up, 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 up. Okay. So this, which is why we call it a deep lift pump.
Right.
You're lifting water each time.
Okay.
And so, and the concept's the same. It's just other designs are more robust. They probably have, I mean, they'll go through a beating, and you can probably pump, I mean, rocks and gravel that go through it probably won't damage it. But I mean, ours, our pump we're expecting probably will have, I mean, if you're using it every day for 4 hours a day, probably have, I mean, a life of 5 years.
Okay.
Or something of that sort.
How much water are you lifting per stroke?
Per stroke? Let's see, I'm not sure per stroke, but we're looking at 400 to 500 gallons per hour.
So when you, the chamber that it's going in is a fairly significant chamber. You're
yeah.
Not going
no, no, no. The stroke length is actually like 2.5 feet in terms of stroke.
Okay.
But so the stroke length is it's like.
So you're pulling it 2.5 feet by 2 inches.
Exactly. So you can calculate the volume.
One. And then when it goes down, it lifts that, and then it does it again, it lifts.
Exactly.
So the pistons are how far apart?
You just have one piston. You just have one piston on a rod, and you just drive that piston up and down.
How do you get the water from, you know, so far down to 40 feet up?
So, let's see, it might be better with the diagram. Should I draw something?
Sure, yeah.
So, essentially, imagine this being the ground, and then this being the water table. This is the 2-inch diameter tube well with a foot valve at the bottom. And then what's happening is this pipe, or I guess this connector rod, with a piston. And this piston has another one-way valve. And so on the upstroke, you're pulling water through here. And then on the downstroke, you're forcing the water, this closes, and this you're forcing water through here.
Okay.
And so one stroke, you get the water here. The second stroke, you do the same thing, water goes through, and you pull up. Up, you push down, you push water through again, then the water level's here. You do that a bunch of times, and eventually, it fills up the whole tube, and eventually, at each stroke, you're lifting water, and water comes out here.
It's kind of climbing ladder.
Water is climbing.
Yeah. Okay.
Water is being lifted slowly and incrementally.
Yeah.
And adding to itself.
Exactly.
So the tolerance is of the piston.
Yes.
That's a big manufacturing
problem. Exactly. So, I mean, either you're dealing with trying to get this washer and trying to get a really good seal over here, a seal between the piston and the tube well or the rice pipe or whatever parts, you need to have a good watertight seal.
Yeah.
Because you are creating a vacuum to pull water through.
Right.
And you don't want water to leak through at different places.
Yeah.
So your valves need to be good. The hardest part was the washer, actually. I mean, and these washers with friction will wear down, and they'll need to be replaced. So, looking at the tolerances for that, what we did was we looked at these are the available materials. How much are people willing to pay for washers? What locally can we make these washers out of? So, and a lot of it was really trial and error. It's like, okay, these are what's available here.
Yeah.
Let's try and make something.
Right.
That'll fit these pipes, that'll work pretty well.
Yeah.
With one of the things having local manufacture, it's not like you have a precision manufacturing situation. You're talking about thousands of an inch.
Exactly.
How did you, what was involved in your final choice? I mean, how did you get there? What are the steps you tried next?
So,
and this one was the one with.
One of, trial and error was actually, I mean, a very large part. I mean, you can call it educated trial and error, but essentially, I mean, you're testing things and you're illuminating things and you're trying to get in the right direction. We aren't looking at tolerances, I mean, very, very precise tolerances, and we shouldn't. So what we're looking at is, okay, we know we're going to have leakage, but the idea is to minimize the leakage and try and, I mean, while water is leaking, you're pulling up tons of water at the same time, so who cares about the leakage? We're looking at the net, net amount of water that we're able to lift. So we're looking at...
Did you have a goal?
We did have a goal.
Water?
Well, I mean, the goal was, I mean, as much water as you could. 500 gallons per hour or more was the goal. So 500 gallons... at 500 gallons at 50 feet deep for $50 was kind of what we're looking at.
Now, so back to the washers, there was an educated trial and error. You were trying different things that you knew would be appropriate. You knew that manufacturer tolerances could not be an issue. So what did you finally do?
What we finally did was, so I explained this, I talked to Tom about this. I mean, starting back from when we were at Stanford, what we found was when we were working on pumps, we found that we hit different bottlenecks at different times. And so, I mean, one of the first bottlenecks that we hit was that the valves that we were working with were not as efficient. They weren't letting enough water through when we were pulling. So, I mean, when we were at Stanford, when we were testing at Terman, we're at the fifth floor of Sherman. We didn't have any kind of frame. The way we were driving these pistons up and down was one person was pulling it up and the other person was pulling it down and we were using our arms. And so that helped us kind of in general get an idea of how this deep lift works. But the limitation there that we faced eventually was, okay, now that we have our valves, you know, our one-way valves actually working and not letting water through, our limitation was, okay, now we don't have, our arms aren't strong enough, and because we're using the wrong muscles, to drive this piston up and down. So our limitation was that we didn't have a frame. And so after that, when we actually started making frames, when we started building a frame for it, I mean, it didn't matter that the frame was amazing or not. As long as, once we had a frame, then we can start saying, okay, these are our limitations. Our frame now tells us that we need to increase the stroke length because, I mean, now that we're able to use the right muscles, then we need to increase the stroke length, or we need to increase this or increase that. And then we got to the point where, okay, now the stroke length and the frame aren't the limitation. We're back to trying to improve the valves again, which was what we started doing. But it was kind of, we're working on valves. Now we hit a limitation that we don't have a good enough treadle. Then we improve the treadle. Then the treadle's good. But now the treadle is so good that it's no longer the limitation. We're being limited by the efficiency of our valves. So now let's come back to the valves and let's try and up the level of the valves.
Right.
And once that's done, then we're just kind of like hopping back and forth and.
Right, how many times did you hop back and forth?
I mean, I would say like four times.
Can you tell us what you did the first time, and then what you did with the treadle, specifically what happened? Because they'll be in the prototypes, and we need to talk about those.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this one, this was the problem with the valve. We fixed this.
Okay.
The treadle. Can you tell us specifically about
that? Definitely.
And also go back to the washer type.
Yeah,
the
washer. Okay, so
let's talk specifically about the solutions you got along the way.
So let's see. Very beginning. All right. So one of the first things, I mean, when we were at Terman, what we tried to do first was try to just understand how these one-way valves together would. I mean, how the deep lift pump actually works. I mean,
yeah.
So, I mean, a good portion of what the group and I spent time on was understanding how this mechanism actually worked. And so, what we did was we went and we purchased a bunch of parts, put those together. Remember, we went to AIDS, we purchased everything. And it was like, okay, this is the deep lift. Then we slowly replaced those things that were purchased with parts that we made, and looked at, okay, you know, this is a washer, and this is a one-way check valve that we're going to put on the bottle. And is it letting water through? Is it leaking? And then...
What did you make those out of?
We made those out of rubber. Just rubber sheet. It was an assembly of rubber sheet with a screw and some metal washers. And there are a bunch of different kinds of one-way valves, and we experimented with different kinds of one-way valves. There were, like, flat valves. There were... What else? There were ball valves, but we didn't actually experiment with that until we were in Burma. One of the things we used was we looked at their pressure pump and looked at the flat valves that they were using in their pressure pump. We did something similar to their flat valve. There's a different kind of valve. It's not called a flat valve. It's I forget what it's called, but I'll give you guys the name for it. But there's a flat valve and there's a different kind of valve. But just looking at trying to figure out which ones sealed pretty well, whether or not we needed a spring to help restore the valve or anything of that sort. And we did that at a pretty low resolution. We did that in terms of, here's the PVC pipe that I'm holding in my hand, and I'm standing right here, and this is the valve. Let's pour water through the top and see how well it holds water.
Yeah.
How well does that hold water at, you know, 30 feet? Okay, now let's hold it at 20 feet and see how well it holds water. And, I mean, from there, from refining those valves, then we actually attached those valves to the bottom of a 50-foot tube well that we built in Termin.
What kind of refinements did you do?
Refinements. In terms of...
Of those valves.
In terms of those valves.
Yeah. It sounds like there's a rubber flat. How do you make a rubber flat better? Different rubber, different geometry, different...
How do you make a rubber flat?
So...
How do you cut that better?
It was... Let's see. For our foot valve, we had... Let's see. We had... A couple of things we did was we purchased some... There are some rubber washers that we purchased from Ace, and we cut those down to size where we use those specifically. I guess this is where I need to get into the details of what these flaps look like. So, I mean, there's a flap valve that looks like this. It's attached at one end. And essentially, if you have a hole right here, and this is the hole, and this is all solid, this is material, that's a collar, and you have that screwed into these posts right here, and so on the upstroke, this is a one-way check valve, that's fairly common, the water will go through because this flap will come up, and then when water tries to go back the other way, then the flap automatically seals.
Right.
So that's one valve, and that's relatively common. What we're trying to do with this was, we're just trying to make it out of, this is what they're using currently in their deep lift pump, or in their suction pump. And so we're trying to use things that were similar to what they were currently already doing.
What did you do? What was the problem you found with one, and how did you make it better?
Let's see. So the problem with this was not that the flap valve wasn't working very well. It was that, so this specifically was going to be a foot valve. And the reason you call it a foot valve is it goes at the foot of the tube well. The problem wasn't as much with this mechanism. A lot of work has been done on check valves. So we weren't trying to create a new check valve. The problem was getting the flip valve down there, or the check valve down there. A lot of work's already been done on how to make check valves really cheap, how to make them, really efficient, which we eventually needed to do later on, and I'll come back to that. But essentially, okay, so I need to pull back a lot.
Sure.
I'm going to go back to, make sure I get back to that question. Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. You're good.
I got my So, if there's a tube well, most of the deep lift pumps that are being sold, this is, if you think about it, if you're going from outside in, this is one of the PowerPoint slides, which might be more clear, and I can walk you through that, is you have, here's the ground, you're going from outside in, here's the tube well, right, and then you have a connector rod. And what you typically have is you have, within this tube well, you have a riser pipe. Mm-hmm. And the reason they call it a riser pipe is that's the pipe within which the water level rises. And so, if you think about it, here's the piston, right? At the end of this riser pipe, you have that one-way foot valve, right? You have that foot valve. And so, the way we saw it was, we were like, that's a lot of material, right? If you think about it, you have 50 feet, if you're thinking 50 feet deep, more than 50 feet of tube well, mm-hmm. right, that's 50. And then you have 50 feet of riser pipe. Mm-hmm. And then you have 50 feet of whatever rod goes down there to hold that mm-hmm. piston down there. So that's 150 feet. Why not eliminate one? Which one can we eliminate? Let's eliminate that riser pipe. Mm-hmm. And we can use the tube well and have that double as a riser pipe. Mm-hmm. The problem is, the check valve that we wanted to use is being held down there by the actual riser pipe. So if you get rid of the riser pipe and you have a tube well down there, you need to somehow attach this flap valve or this split valve to the bottom of this tube well. So in order to save 50 feet of material, we need to somehow figure out how to solve this problem. We need a foot valve down there. The actual foot valve wasn't too much of an issue. The actual getting it down there was the issue.
How did you do that?
So, the way we did that was we proposed that if you have the tube well and if you required that a collar be installed, So when you put down this tube well, you have this small collar. That what you could do is you could lower a flip valve that was heavy enough that it would, by itself, you could, lower it down like almost like you were fishing. You'd lower it down so that it seals against the collar, but it would, its weight by itself would seal it down there, would let it sit down there. Then, essentially, you have a flip valve sitting on the bottom. Negates the need for the actual 50 feet of riser pipe.
So it has to be, that has to be heavier than 2 feet of water. That is the pressure you're pulling up. It's got to be heavier than when you're pulling it through, so it actually sits right
at the moment. Yeah, so it needs to be heavy.
You don't have a fastener, it's not force fit, it's not... Right?
So from there, what we found was, it worked, but there was a lot of leakage. There was a lot of leakage through here.
Right.
Because it wasn't any kind of fit or fast or anything of that sort. Mm-hmm. So from there, we went to different designs in terms of improving this check valve. Was that instead of having a collar onto which we would have the heavy foot valve sit, we said, hey, if we had this collar, why don't we have this over here was a flap valve, right? It's a flap. The other kind of valve involved. Something that could move up and down. And so when it's down, it seals against these two surfaces. Mm-hmm. When the water tries to go up, then the water can go this way. Mm-hmm. So if we already have a collar, instead of having the valve sit on it, mm-hmm. why not use that collar, seal against that collar, and then have something like that, such that this can move up and down. Mm-hmm. Water can come through here. Mm-hmm. Or when it needs to, it'll seal. And if you need to, you can... To install it, you would lower something and push it through, mm-hmm. which is what this is for.
Right.
You know? And then if it's broken or if it's busted, you just pull it out. Mm-hmm. So, I guess that would... The geometry of that is slightly different, so that you can actually pull it out. So if you pulled hard enough, then it would come out.
Now this stopped leakage. How did it stop the leaking from happening?
So it stopped leaking because this material here was this was sealing against the collar, and this itself was the weight of the water was pushing the rubber washer, the rubber flap. And you're having it seal against this collar. Whereas in this case, whereas in this case, right, you're having a collar, and then instead you have this valve assembly. And this is some kind of relatively heavy material.
Oh, I see.
And
instead, you made the thing the valve itself.
You made the thing about
the valve sitting on it.
Exactly.
And that was made out of metal.
Yeah. We wanted something heavy. I went to the machine shop and I was like, this is what's readily available. Mm-hmm. Let's grab, some brass tube. Something that was pretty heavy, some steel to me. Mm-hmm. And we used that. We'll use that to make our heavy foot valve. So
the next one wasn't made out of brass. The one that has the multi-geometry, the valve itself that you put into the thing. What was that made? You went into the shop, you made that, you found out what was wrong with it, now you went into the shop and you made this one out of...
This one was actually made in Burma.
You made that in Burma?
This one was actually in Burma.
Okay, and what was that made out of?
This is mild steel, I believe. This is all mild steel. They work mostly with mild steel.
Okay. Okay. Now, where's the rubber?
The rubber, so you have two things in here.
Okay.
You have this, which is to give it some kind of stiffness, and you have that being the rubber.
Okay.
So, I'll get back to... So, what was done here was... We have that heavy foot valve. Can I pull up that PowerPoint? You need to leave soon.
I gotta go. Yeah, but let me.
Because there's a timeline in there that shows you, I think, exactly what you're looking for.
Because there's so many more questions about it. Because these nuts and bolts are really good for us.
Yeah.
Monday.
I should, yeah.
Monday afternoon. Let's just redo. Let's start again on Monday afternoon.
Okay. And then I'll try and bring some stuff.
No, I'm not around Mondays afternoons. That's all. Yeah.
So.
That's the only.
My father's tomorrow.
Yeah. No, I'm actually not here tomorrow either.
So, how about you pick a day?
Tuesday afternoon.
How's Tuesday?
Tuesday,
is that the 23rd?
Afternoon is good. Yeah.
Let's start. Can we start early on Tuesday?
Yeah. Let's go.